Okay, I'm here. It's Gary Parrish still, and this is still the Ion College Basketball Podcast. And I'm talking to you now in the morning of December 5th, which is otherwise known as the morning after the ACC Big Ten Challenge concluded and was highlighted by North Carolina's confusing and surprising victory at top-ranked Michigan State. It was a wild night in East Lansing. This 24 hours after Duke's impressive win over Michigan the previous night, a game which my guest today was actually at. So is Michigan State flawed? Did North Carolina figure something out? Has Duke turned a corner? Is Michigan missing Trey Burke more than we anticipated? Going to talk about all of those things and more, and I'm going to talk about them today with Nicole Auerbach, who is, of course, a national college basketball reporter for USA Today. Nicole, it's Gary. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right for a Thursday morning, although I will tell you that living in the South, we don't deal with extreme weather too often, except right now, like at this moment that I'm speaking to you, the Memphis area and North Mississippi region is under an ice storm warning.
Really?
We are on the verge. It's fine right now. It's like 65 degrees outside right now. No worries. It was 73 all day yesterday for whatever reason, and I couldn't begin to understand it because I'm not a meteorologist or anybody that pays close enough attention to meteorologists. But we are supposed to have a vicious ice storm that will shut our city down. So it's possible that I'm going to be trapped in my office here at the house for the next 5 days. But anyway, you folks are you're used to this type of stuff, but we can't handle it.
Yes, some of us went to college in cold weather states where it snows from October to April, so they don't shut down anything for anything.
A few years ago, I went to a Michigan State game like in January. I think they were playing Minnesota. I remember it was because it was Tubby and Izzo, and I was going to back-to-back games. I was doing Michigan and somebody one night in Ann Arbor, and the next night was Minnesota, Michigan State, or they were backwards. But I just was going from one to the other. And I remember being in East Lansing and driving around and just seeing, you know, 10-foot stacks of snow and ice just everywhere you were. You pushed over to – and I was – I'm not going to say I've never seen that before, but I had never seen it, you know, just – and it was just like that. When you talk to people – again, I'm from the South. I live in the South. They would say, no, it's always like this. That ice is always there. That's not like there today and it'll be gone tomorrow. Like it is always there. And I remember I walked out of the Breslin Center and it was after the game, like 1 a.m, late. Like, you know what it's like to leave an arena late at night. And it was one of those deals where I never remember where I parked. So you walk out of the door that you walk out of the Breslin Center if you're a media member and you have to go right to, say, go to the media lot, whatever it is. Well, if you had to go right, I went left. And at this point, I have no idea where I'm at. And I had to walk all the way around the Breslin Center at 1 a.m. in these quite literally freezing temperatures. And at that was the most pain I've ever felt from being cold. Down here, if you get cold, you just sort of get cold. You know, you go, God, it's cold. I had never hurt before from the weather. I was hurting that night. How did you get used to living like that?
I'm not sure. Everyone just tells themselves that, you know, it builds toughness, just, you know, those Michigan winners. But it's crazy because I did get used to it on some level. And now I do get colder, like in New York, like I am freezing. And I did not used to be this cold. But I can probably top your Breslin story. Last year, I was up there for Michigan State. Mm-hmm. And I may or may not have slipped on a patch of ice right outside the Breslin Center. And Mike Rosenberg from Sports Illustrated laughed a lot and continued to bring it up to the entire press row. So that's my Breslin ice freezing cold story. So, and it was very embarrassing.
Hey, listen, I'm with you. It's so cold, and ice is slippery. So what are you going to do? Okay, let's start talking basketball and start with the big game from last night, which was North Carolina going to Michigan State and winning. I think the final score was 79-65. I made this point on Twitter because I think it adds perspective. If you can forget like the names of the schools, like forget that we're talking about a program that is the caliber of North Carolina's program. What we watched happen last night was a top-ranked team, a number one team in the country, lose on its home floor by double digits to an unranked team, which is very, very rare. We see number one teams lose to unranked teams from time to time, but it's typically on the road, in conference play, hostile environment. To lose at home by double digits to an unranked team when you're ranked number one in the country is really, really rare. And so I know you've seen both of these teams in person, as have I. We were both at the Champions Classic for Michigan State's win over Kentucky. And then we were both at the Mohegan Sun a couple of weekends ago for North Carolina's win over Louisville. So let me start with a very simple question. What are we to make of North Carolina, which has, for folks who haven't been keeping track, in a span of 18 days, beaten Louisville and Michigan State, but lost to Belmont and UAB?
Well, I guess we shouldn't have been that surprised, right? Because we saw we saw them come out of nowhere to beat Louisville. But I really did not expect them to go into the Breslin Center. It's such a hard place to play. It's a very hostile environment. And they just, right off the bat, what was the opening, what was it, like?
Yeah, it was 18-4 or 18-6.
That's just so unusual for teams to do at the Breslin Center. So I guess you should have known something was up. But, yeah, they're a very confusing team. And, you know, you pose the question, and like, you know, everyone last night is tweeting, like, I have no idea what to make of this team. And then, you know, I start getting people responding to that. And I got, you know, people saying, oh, they just played other level of competition, which is not it. And they're like, oh, well, they're just inconsistent and young. And that's true. But that doesn't explain all of it. I mean, we see fluctuations, or we see teams have good wins and surprising losses. But theirs are just so extreme that it's crazy. I mean, we use the coaches poll numbers, right? So Louisville was actually number two when they beat them.
Sure.
So they wins over the top one and two teams in the country. So nobody else has better wins than that. And yet, like, two bad loss. I mean, and Belmont may be good, and, you know, like, that's
Belmont's good, but you're not supposed to lose to them at home.
Right, right. So it's a bad loss for North Carolina. It's not necessarily a bad loss, but it's a head-scratcher. But, I mean, I guess we shouldn't be surprised, because we saw that they had the potential. I mean, and Louisville had its own issues that day, but we knew that, like, when the pieces do come together, they do have a lot of talented players, and, you know, obviously Marcus Paige is great, so I don't know what to make of them, but, you know, it is a really small sample size, which makes their results look incredibly strange right now.
You know, it's funny because you mentioned the fluctuation between these things, and I think that's really important, because sometimes people will be dismissive of polls, whether it's the coaches poll or the AP poll or any sort of rankings that I put out. But point spreads are pretty unbiased. I mean, you know, folks understand those. And you know, against Belmont, they were a 14-point favorite. So like you said, Belmont's good. It's a quality program. But these two things are facts. A, Belmont had not beaten a top 25 team. As for all the success, regular season success and conference titles and all those things that Belmont had done and achieved, they had not beaten a ranked team in a decade. And so for them to go to North Carolina and win was pretty remarkable. They were a 14-point favorite. Underdog in that game. So Carolina was a 14-point favorite this year in a game that it lost. Then they've now been 10-point underdogs, both against Louisville and Michigan State, in games that they won. And I think the Michigan State line actually went to 10.5 by the time it tipped off. So I get winning games you're not supposed to win and losing games you're not supposed to lose. But to do it, I mean, and the UAB one, they were an 8-point favorite there. And so, but to do it this drastically and this, you know, typically we'll see a team struggle in November, but then get it straight in January, or struggle in January, but then get it straight in March. This is like every other game, they look like a completely different basketball team, which is just, again, I don't have the best memory in the world, but I don't remember something like this.
No, and it is strange, right? It's like a weekly or even like a half a week change. And it's just so strange that you'd think some of this would carry over into the next game or anything. And one other person I wanted to bring up specifically was McAdoo.
Sure.
Because I think, you know, I was so surprised in that Louisville game that they won and he didn't do much. And he was like kind of a non-factor. And I'm just looking at his stat line last night, because I was actually watching it without sound, which makes it actually harder to keep up with exactly how people are doing. And, you know, 3-for-11 shooting, 8 points, you know, it's surprising that they won these big games without him not, you know, stepping into this huge role that people have been expecting him to do for a couple of years now. But it's just interesting how they're winning these games. They're getting a lot from Kennedy Meeks and Nate Britt and those guys that, you know, I don't know entering the season if we would have expected it. So they're just such an interesting team. And obviously entering a season with so much uncertainty with PJ Harrison, you know, maybe that just makes them even more unpredictable. And maybe there's kind of, you know, I thought after the Louisville game, players sort of seemed resigned to the fact that they're not going to wait around for PJ to come save them. So they were stepping up and trying to score and fill these different roles that they need to. So then I thought that, okay, they're fixed after that, you know, and then the UAB happens. But it's sort of, I think in general, they are coming to that conclusion where you are seeing different guys step up at different times and key times. So I'm just surprised that McAdoo is not one of their leading scorers.
I mean, that's a good point, because when you look at them being down, essentially two starters in Leslie McDonald and PJ Harrison, PJ obviously, or I believe obviously, more important to what they're trying to do than Leslie. But still, both rotation players, both important players, you'd say, okay, they're shorthanded. So like the guys, the quality players or prospects that they do have, that we can identify, those guys are going to have to be great for them to beat teams like Louisville and Michigan State. And McAdoo would be one of those guys that you would identify that way. And Jay Billis made this point last night during the broadcast. He said, listen, McAdoo's a good college basketball player. And so that comes off like you're saying somebody's good at their job. Like if I said so-and-so's good at their job, it sounds like a compliment. But the point he was really trying to make was, if you'd like translate it into what he was, it was like, he's not what everybody has been trying to say he is for the past 3 years. Like he's, you know, he's a good college basketball player. When you hear an analyst or anybody say that about somebody, they're stressing very specific words. Good as opposed to great or terrific or fabulous, and college basketball player as opposed to prospect or player. And he's not the prospect that we thought he was going to be. He's not the player that we thought he was going to be. And the idea that – so really, if you think that McAdoo was great, if you're one of those people who bought into the McAdoo thing, and I was one of those people, you know, I look at recruiting rankings. I saw him in the summers in the AAU. I thought he would be a much better college basketball player than he's been right now. If you're one of those people, then right now they are missing Leslie McDonald, PJ Harrison, and the future first-round draft pick James Michael McAdoo that you thought they were going to have, and still able to pull off these victories, which is really, really wild. Let me ask you this. So on Monday, when the coaches' poll is released, we're going to have a new number one there, you know, presumably. I think almost certainly we'll have a new number one there. Still got to figure out who's it going to be. I know there are still lots of games to be played this week, but in your opinion, if you had to change the coaches' poll today, what would your ballot look like? Would it be Arizona number one?
Well, I can't vote in it. Obviously, I'm not.
Right.
But, yes, I think – and Arizona has to beat UNLV, and then they'll move up in both polls and be number one. And I think that's completely fitting. They're the best team I've seen so far this season. I don't think – that doesn't necessarily mean they'll be the best team at the end of the year. But I think they're playing so well right now. And so many coaches have said to me that they look like a team that's like – it's like February. Like they're so cohesive. They're clicking. They get so much production from so many different guys, so balanced. I mean, Aaron Gordon – is one of these elite freshmen. But he's going to, you know, he doesn't always get brought up because his numbers are not going to be that impressive this year because he doesn't have to score that much for them. And, you know, he's averaging, or at least he was the other day, he's averaging like 12 and 10. And like, that's probably what he'll do this season. That's exactly what they need. And like, they put him in this veteran team. And like Nick Johnson has been playing incredibly well. TJ McConnell, a transfer point guard from Duquesne. Like they have all of these pieces and they just look so much. They're so put together right now. They look good against Duke. And again, Duke is, I think, a team that's going to get a lot better in the next couple months and will be in that Final Four contender group too. But I think Arizona definitely deserves to be in that top spot. And I don't know about you, but they've been very impressive every time I've watched them, and I saw them in person against Duke. And I just really like that team. And, you know, I know maybe they're – resume. I mean, they have
that win at San Diego State is terrific.
Right.
It's one of those that maybe on the night. I remember that game was early, and I was at an NBA game that night. So I come home, and I'm going to watch Arizona play San Diego State, and you know they win the game, and you go, hey, that's an impressive win. But I was talking to Greg Doyle, my colleague, about this yesterday. We were talking about Florida State football, and he was posing the question, why does everybody think Florida State is so great, while acknowledging that we both think they are, but why do we just automatically assume that when we have questions about, say, Missouri and Auburn and even Ohio State? And the point I tried to make to him was, I think everybody has this memory of this Saturday night in primetime, pretty early in the season, where Florida State's playing an undefeated Clemson team on the road, ranked in the top five, and they just ran them completely off the field. And so from that night, we go, my God, Florida State's just on another level than everybody else. What we find out subsequently is that Clemson wasn't as good as we thought on that night. They're not really a top five team. They certainly went on to lose more games. And so while that victory is still impressive for the Seminoles, probably doesn't mean as much or look as good today as it did then. The flip side of that, I think, is this Arizona-San Diego State situation, because on that night, you know, we go, okay, fine. Nice win, Arizona. You were able to survive the arena, the student section, so on and so forth. But we didn't think San Diego State was going to be that great. They lose two key players. The heralded recruiting class doesn't come until next year. But what we find out now after watching San Diego State over the Thanksgiving holidays is that that's a legitimate top 25 team. And to go on the road and beat a legitimate top 25 team, I think speaks volumes about Arizona. Mm-hmm. And so I guess the point I'm trying to make is this. That win at San Diego State looks way better today than it did on the night that it happened. And when you combine that with just your eyeballs, what they tell you, and then the victory over Duke, I think they're a deserving number one team in the country.
Yeah, well, I think what, you know, Sean Miller was saying when they were in New York, obviously everyone wants to play in New York. You want to play in the Garden and you want to play teams like Duke. But for them, it was so important because of what you're talking about, the late tip and the West Coast games are hard to catch. So it's hard to get that audience that you're talking about to, like, have that impact. So when you're playing at the Garden on a Friday night, a holiday weekend, and people and you're playing Duke, so people are watching. It's, you know, you've got Aaron Gordon, Jabari Parker in the game, you know, and you win. That's a game that now people are going to think of when they think of Arizona. So it's the same, you know, it's the effect of what you're saying with Florida State. So I think that was huge for them. But mostly, you know, I really think, you know, it's terrible because it's, you know, East Coast bias or, sure, you know, whatever. But it is hard to keep up with some of those Pac-12 and West Coast conference teams. I mean, think about Gonzaga. It's been the knockout. You know, a lot of people, you're not able to watch them play all the time.
No, it's very, it's very difficult because, like, even for me, like, I live in the Central Time Zone, so it's a little bit simpler. But I also have a 10-year-old. You know, I get up every single morning at 5:45. I know I have this reputation of, like, oh, Parrish is out all night. And when I'm on the road, like, I have a good time. That's you've witnessed that. But but at home, like, I'm up every morning at 5:45. Like, before I came down and sat here and sat down to talk with you, like, I've already been up. I got my son ready for school, taken him to school, dropped him off, come back home. Like, and so once you get into a habit where you're forced to get up that early every morning, it becomes very difficult. Even if I set time apart and aside and say, hey, tonight I'm watching, you know, Gonzaga play, there's a decent chance I'm just going to fall asleep in the middle of the game. Like, it so I don't know whether it's called East Coast bias or Central Zone bias, but it's just a reality. Like, these games are on late at night. It can be difficult to watch them as often as you watch, say, Duke or Carolina.
Right. So I think that's why, you know, that was a really big win for Arizona. But I agree completely. I mean, I think, you know, pretty much I think anyone would agree with us that Arizona has been very impressive, and I think they definitely deserve their turn at number one. You know, to date, I would say they're the best team I've seen. So good for them. I think, I mean, it's going to be the first time that there's been a Pac-12 team at the number one spot in some time. So it'll be interesting. You know, the Pac-12 is kind of back after a couple or a year or two of down years. And now, you know, Arizona looks really good and really like the definite national title contender, I think.
And what's interesting is that with the way Sean is recruiting, he's one of these rare guys, Sean Miller, of course, who is, you know, an obviously great recruiter, because that's very easy to gauge. We debate, or at least folks debate all the time, like, who's a good quote, good coach and bad coach and mediocre coach. And that can be very difficult to gauge or properly register. Like, how do you even do it? But I mean, there are some guys that are undeniably great, like Tom Izzo and mm-hmm. Mike Krzyzewski and Bo Ryan. But, you know, in terms of strictly quote coaching, and then other guys who, like, you know, it's very difficult. Difficult to gauge. What's not difficult to gauge is if you're a great recruiter. Like, the recruiting rankings suggest, you know, they sort of, it's a very easy thing to point at. And Sean's one of these guys that has a reputation of being a great recruiter and a great coach. And what, you know, with the way that he is recruiting and building that program at Arizona, I don't think it's a stretch. I guess I would say two things. A, they're going to keep doing this for a while. Like, this is Arizona's one chance. Like, Arizona's going to be good again next year and the year after and the year after. But also, like, and it's wild to think about it in these terms. Like, he could smash what all the great stuff Lute Olson did at Arizona. Sean Miller's young enough and operating at a high enough level. Like, he could reasonably, you know, break all of Lute Olson's records, which is wild to think that Arizona could have. I know it's not back-to-back coaches because they had that weird little stretch there with Kevin O'Neill and everything that it went through trying to transition from Lute to the next guy. But the idea that you could find your next great, possibly Hall of Fame coach immediately after Lute Olson is pretty remarkable and lucky.
Yeah, no, and I think you're right. I mean, they're poised for long-term success. You see some of these teams. I mean, look at Duke, look at how, you know, Coach K sustains, because you can mix in those likely one and dones, those like really, really high level talents. But if you mix them in with some veteran pieces around them, like Arizona's got the perfect mix of players around Gordon. And he's kept talking about how it's just so easy to transition to the college game when you have veteran guards, which is true. I mean, it doesn't seem like he's had any problem. And I think that sort of system is easily sustainable, because if you have those veteran guys, you're not at Kentucky where you're starting over essentially every single year.
Sure.
Then, you know, it is sustainable and you are going to be good for years to come. So I completely agree. I think Sean Miller's, this is not the only year that he's going to have a shot at, you know, a Final Four and national title.
So the most prominent win on the Arizona schedule, of course, is that Duke win that came last Friday night at Madison Square Garden. You subsequently saw Duke again at Cameron Indoor earlier this week against Michigan. Interested first, I mean, you're a Michigan grad. You're very close to that program. Did we underestimate how much the Wolverines were going to miss Trey Burke?
I think that's maybe part of it. I think that team will be better in about a month. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they have a lot of young pieces. You have a freshman point guard trying to replace player of the year guy. So they need to figure out to get things going. And, you know, Duke, Nick Stauskas, you know, a slight injury, but also Duke shut him down, and that was their goal, and then nothing else really worked for Michigan's offense. And so, you know, they got to figure out ways to score and ways to get different guys the ball. But, like, yes, they missed Trey Burke because Trey Burke could kind of make something out of nothing. He could create for himself and for others. And you also had Tim Hardaway. You had, like, these guys who had experience but also could just kind of take over the game. I mean, Tim Hardaway was up and down, but he could also go on, like, you know, a 9-0 personal run. Like, they had these guys. So I think they're still figuring it out. Mitch McGarry doesn't look like he's completely in shape yet. So they've got some issues, but I don't think they're going to finish, you know, like second in the Big Ten, but they should finish, you know, in the top four or five. And I think they'll end up playing a lot better later in the season. But I do think that the loss of Trey Burke has been bigger than we expected. I think we kind of thought, oh, well, they kept Glenn Robinson and Mitch McGarry, so, you know, that's a top 10 team, but they're definitely not playing like a top 10 team right now. But I don't think, and maybe they won't be at the end of the year, but I think they'll be a top 25 team, you know, once they figure out some of these other parts of the, especially their offense.
I think that's true. I mean, listen, when you combine talent with, we were talking about guys who are respected as great coaches earlier. John Beilein is obviously one, you know, would be on, you know, everybody's list as a great basketball coach. And I know there's no strict rule, but this is more likely to be true than untrue. If you combine really good players, and I think they have really good players, with a really good coach, which everybody thinks they have a really good coach, like, it's hard to screw that up. You know, it doesn't mean you can't, but at some point, whether it's December, you know, late December or January, February, even early March, at some point that Michigan team's going to start clicking. And I don't know if they'll be a Final Four team again or play in the title game again, but, you know, they'll be good. They'll beat good people, and they'll be, I'm with you, a top 25 team again. On the other side of the court the other night, was a Duke team that was, I think, in need of a quality win, and they get a quality win, you know, and they do it at home. But also sort of a subplot was Rashid Suleiman, who is an NBA prospect, you know, McDonald's All-American guy, who was an important player on that team last year, sort of an All-American candidate this year, and did not play at all. And afterwards, Mike Krzyzewski, while he is never going to bury a player, you can read a lot into what he's trying to say by what he actually says. So when people ask, So what does Suleiman need to do to get on the court? Krzyzewski was very clear. Just be better than the other guys. You know, is he better than the other guys? If he's better than the other guys, then of course I'll play him. And I don't know if that's sending a message or if it's just a statement, you know, a sort of a matter-of-fact statement. But either way, it's interesting that a guy like Suleiman could be you know, placed at the end of the bench so early in the season. What do you make of that development?
Yeah, I think that's interesting and very unexpected entering the season. But after I've seen Duke now, I think more than anybody else in person, because I've seen them three times. So I've seen UConn a lot too, randomly, but which is actually really fun. Side note: Shabazz Napier, one of the most exciting players to watch. But so the Suleiman thing, you know, I don't think they didn't need him, you know, against Michigan. Like I think they have other guys who can kind of fill the role that he did last year now. And I'm not entirely sure. You're right that he's definitely, I don't know, in the doghouse is probably not the right way to put it, but he's not, you know, like there was no reason for him not to play except for the fact that they didn't want to play him.
Right.
So, you know, and Mike Krzyzewski did say that he was supportive on the bench and, you know, all of that stuff. So, I don't know. You know, it's interesting. The guys in the locker room kind of just said along the same lines, like, no, but nobody's going to say anything too explosive about that stuff. It'll be interesting to see. But, I think what you started off by saying about how badly Duke needed, like, a solid win, I think that's completely true. And you could tell the relief after that game, after the Michigan game, because, Michigan did not play well. But Duke won, you know, handily, and they were up comfortably the entire game. And, you know, now after the last three games, you can look at the body of work and say, wow, Duke's defense finally showing up and, like, finally working after the Vermont game where they give up 90 points to Vermont and everyone just starts shredding, and rightfully so, shredding their defense because they couldn't do much of anything and they couldn't stop anyone and the rebounding was bad and all of that. So now you're starting to see that, and I think they really needed that part to come together and something kind of positive to talk about because, you know, they had lost their two big games. And, like, there's no shame in losing to Arizona or Kansas. Like, those are both really, really good teams. But you need to win one of these. So you need to beat the Michigan and kind of get back on track and get some of those, you know, these wins that we're used to seeing a Duke team have in November, December. We're used to seeing them get the big wins that build up the resume. You know, but this team is different. It's kind of the opposite end where it's going to get better throughout the season instead of kind of just starting on this, like, really high note like we've seen in the past.
All right. Well, listen, I know you've got a ton of things to do today, and we've been talking long enough here. So let me wrap this up by telling you thank you for joining me and by telling all you guys listening, I really do appreciate you being here at CBSSports.com. Listen to the podcast, reading what I write, interacting with me on Twitter. Of course, you can find Nicole Auerbach on Twitter. So go do that. And remember to subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. That's on iTunes. It's the quickest way to get your hands on the latest podcast. So go subscribe. It's free. And either way, I will talk to you again really, really soon. Thanks so much.